past. 55 degrees now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Our weekly in-depth look at aspects of the COVID-19 situation, how it relates to you, vaccines, and a lot of other related topics. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being back on again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the biggest question I've gotten asked in the last 3 or 4 days, and I kid you not, I just got a message during the commercial break with another person asking the same question, is Douglas County for sure returning to extreme guidelines in a few days?
So nothing's for sure. The state makes those judgments, and so it's really up to the state to make that judgment. However, looking at the numbers, we clearly are well over the number that would get us out of the high range. But again, that's a state decision as to when and how that happens.
And that should be coming out tomorrow. I started tracking this time around and just started doing essentially, well, I'm not, you know, tricky with Excel or something, but I basically did it on a Post-it note and kept track as we went along through the past 2 weeks. And I mean, well above. So unless something changes with metrics and all of that, that obviously creates some changes for business and a lot of other organizations if that indeed takes place later in the week.
That's correct. So we've been in the high range, which has allowed restaurants, bars, and gyms to be open for considerable in-person business. That could change if the risk level changes.
So the county can have 224 cases in a two-week period to stay in high. And what is driving this uptick? In fact, maybe run down the numbers for today.
Well, it looks like we had about 340 or so cases over the two-week period. So we were well over the number. And when we're well over the number, that comes from lots of different places. So we've had a couple of big nursing home outbreaks. We've had a lot of workplace outbreaks. And then we're seeing a lot of outbreaks associated with gatherings. So just today we had a Super Bowl party and a wedding, which there were cases there and lots of contacts in those venues.
Wow. Thoughts about the school-related cases? It seems like we've had a lot of those since some of the schools have been reopening to more in-person learning.
Right. So schools seem to be a place where there are lots of cases, although we're not sure that there's much spread in schools. So when we look at schools themselves, we cannot find very many cases where there's a teacher and then a student, or a student and then a teacher, or a student and then another student in the same classroom. However, what we do see is that things that happen at school, so kids go to school and then they decide they'll have a party, go to the party, and that's where it spreads. So, for example, Summit High School in Bend opened. There was a big party. There were 24 cases associated with the party, and the schools closed down again. So that wasn't school itself. But you know, when kids get back to school, they scheme about how they will do parties.
Well, and obviously the kids have really been lacking, for the most part, in a lot of socialization opportunities over this past 10 months.
Well, that's exactly right. So you can be sure that if you have not seen your friends in months and months and months and now get back to school, that one of the things that kids will want to do is they'll want to congregate. I mean, that's what teenagers are all about.
So are the cases with the kids, are they as serious as adult cases just in terms of what can happen if you're positive?
So in general, younger people tend not to get very sick. And in fact, we have not seen a lot of sick, really sick kids. Although they do get some symptoms, they're not particularly sick. But what happens then is they spread it to other friends. Then their friends spread it to their parents. And their parents can work in a nursing home or at the hospital.
And statewide cases are going the opposite way of Douglas County. Statewide cases, though, are going down.
Right. So statewide and nationwide and worldwide cases are going down. But you'll remember the rest of the state hasn't really been open very much. And so Lane, Benton, Lynn, Marion, those counties have not been open. So they've not had schools open. They've not had restaurants open. They've not had bars and gyms open. And so they've not had those kinds of places where people may congregate.
So it's interesting, too, yesterday looking at the numbers, and there's sort of a tag that goes with this, but yesterday the highest case count of any county was Douglas County for the Sunday numbers. However, that also ties into the fact that there was a computer server error, and so yesterday's case count was abnormally low, and they're expecting it to be abnormally high today to kind of make up the difference as they get the backlog processed.
Right. So there was a little bit of a data glitch yesterday, but still, nonetheless, we are clearly having more cases than we've ever had, and other cases are having fewer cases than they've had in months.
So around the U.S., what are some of the current hot spots right now?
Well, South Carolina appears to be quite a hot spot, and South Carolina is worrisome because South Carolina is the one place where we've seen several cases of a South African variant. There are then just scattered cases. For example, the Texas Panhandle is just really hot this week, and then places in Montana have lots of disease. But other than that, the country has cooled down quite a bit over the last several weeks.
What about worldwide? What are some of the hot spots?
Well, the hot spots, Israel continues to have lots of disease. Spain and Portugal continue to have lots of disease. And Brazil now, for almost 6 months, has continued to have a tremendous amount of disease.
And what's the idea there with Brazil? Any idea as to why they're having such trouble with it?
Well, Brazil's got not a very advanced healthcare system. The other concern we have about Brazil, though, is there are places that had quite a bit of disease in the springtime, and the thought was that they would be protected this time because enough people would have had it and they would have immunity. But the stories, at least, are such that people who had it back in the summertime are getting it again and getting quite sick with it even the second time.
Now, let's talk about vaccines for a bit here. There was another mass vaccination event on Saturday. Talk about how those work.
So these mass vaccination events are several different ways. I think what they're doing in Douglas County is we're doing the fairgrounds. Aviva's been setting them up, and they're very well organized, and they're bringing people through and giving them vaccines. Those have worked well, we think, for those populations, the first group being the 1A population, healthcare workers, and then the second group being the teachers. For seniors, we're trying to do the vaccines at their doctor's office or at the pharmacy.
Now, is the supply of vaccines increasing at all?
Yes. So the vaccine has been a little bit choppy last week. All of the deliveries were delayed last week because of the bad weather back east. So the delivery we were supposed to get last Monday, we just got today. So this week we should get this week's delivery, last week's delivery plus this week's delivery. So this week, actually, we're going to get a fair amount of vaccine. And then in the future, the amount of vaccine is going to be up. So in the past, we typically gotten about 1,000 to 1,200 new doses a week. We expect to get up to 2,500 new doses per week. So that really is a good sign.
Now, go over the prioritization schedule from the Oregon Health Authority. Maybe explain a little bit more about how that works.
So say that again? Go over the prioritization
schedule from the Oregon Health Authority and explain a little bit about how that works.
Yes. So the 1A group were healthcare workers and first responders and people in nursing homes. We're pretty much done with those. The next group were teachers. We're pretty much done with that. And then Oregon has decided to go in a declining age band. So we started first with people 80 and above. Last week, people 75 and above. This week, people 70 and above. And next week, people 65 and above. After that, we're going to sequence in other essential workers and people with underlying conditions, but not exactly clear how that's going to work. I think the governor is going to announce that probably on Friday.
Well, and probably part of that is also going to tie into what the vaccine supply is, if it's plentiful versus if things are kind of tight still.
Yeah, so I think we, as the vaccine supply gets more plentiful, we'll be able to go ahead and do more. So we think probably by March, we should be getting about 5,000 doses a week, 2,500 new doses, and 2,500 second doses.
All right, going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. Looking at COVID-19, spending some time right now talking about vaccines a bit. We have talked about this for a few weeks, about a third vaccine. I'm curious if that is getting any closer, if there's any new developments on that front.
Well, the third vaccine is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine made by Janssen Pharmaceuticals. It's a different kind of vaccine. It is an adenoviral vector vaccine. It's thought to be really quite effective. It's a single dose, which will make it a lot easier. And it's not a lipid nanoparticle. So for people who've had reactions to the mRNA vaccines, they may be able to get this vaccine without reactions. So we're very excited about that vaccine. And we may know as early as the end of the week.
And how quickly can that be rolled out if it gets approved?
Well, you know, with the other mRNA vaccines, about 10 days after approval, it was able to get rolled out. So we're thinking maybe as early as mid-March, it could get rolled out. And that would be an especially good vaccine for something like a drive-through thing, because it's not associated with the rare but serious reactions associated with the mRNA vaccines. And it's just a single dose.
And what is it about the way that this is formulated that makes it a single dose versus the other two that are two doses?
Well, it's kind of interesting. It appears that the mRNA vaccines, when they first came out, had relatively low efficacy with a single dose, and that efficacy went up with a second dose. With the J&J, they had pretty good efficacy with a single dose, and so they decided to just give a single dose. Turns out in the end that all of these vaccines seem to have pretty good efficacy with one dose that gets improved with the second dose. But vaccines get licensed for a specific way of giving it, and that's what they do. I mean, so there's been some talk about going to a single dose for mRNA vaccines, but I think Dr. Fauci has ruled that out.
Interesting. For public health professionals like you, what are some of the new things that are being learned about the COVID-19 virus?
Well, one of the things we're seeing is that the variants are really very interesting. There are now over 1,000 different variants. Now, most of those are going to be just nonsense variants that don't make a difference. Some make it weaker, but it seems in this case that the weaker ones seem to die out, and the stronger ones, the ones that are more virulent, seem to actually take hold. And so that's been an interesting thing. But then just an interesting thing today, another story that suggested that people who wear eyeglasses seem to be less likely to get the disease, suggesting that some spread of this disease may be in the eyes.
Interesting. That's the first time I've heard it. And now I am glad that I have worn glasses for a long time. I'll be darned. How much regarding how COVID-19 works has shifted as we've gone through the past several months?
So say that again.
So how much, what things about how COVID-19 works, or maybe the understanding of it, what are some of the things that have shifted over the past several months? I mean, is this kind of an evolving virus, or is it just that our knowledge of it is evolving?
So it's both our knowledge is evolving and the virus is evolving. So when the virus evolves, it doesn't seem to change anything in the way it works. Still seems to be a respiratory disease associated with fever, loss of smell and taste. So the disease itself doesn't change. And in fact, we don't think the deadliness or the mortality of the disease has changed very much. With the variants, what just changes is how fast it spreads and how well previous antibodies prevent another infection. But we've learned other new things about it. We think there's probably more aerosol spread than originally we thought. And the reason we think this is because of the very fast spread in certain areas. So, for example, in our nursing home outbreak, we went from no cases to over 30 cases in a single week, which is probably one incubation period. So it really is quite contagious in certain situations. The other thing that seems to be really weird about this is that there are some people who don't spread it to anyone else, and then other people who spread it to 20 or more.
Any idea why the difference?
We don't know. Actually, we think there doesn't seem to be any difference in the people who are the super spreaders. They don't tend to be any sicker or any less sick or anything else, but people who tend to congregate more, people who tend to talk loudly, people who tend to have a small social distance, all seem to be the people who are most likely to be super spreaders. So the person who doesn't go out much, who's the wallflower, doesn't talk very much, they seem to spread a lot less than the gregarious guy.
Interesting. Now, with the vaccines out, how long will it take to approach something like the normal of the past? I mean, it seems like what I'm hearing in different sources, the opinions have really varied. Some have said maybe late spring. Others have said summer. Some have said fall. I've even heard some health officials say 2022 or maybe 2023 before things get back to mostly normal.
Well, we're a big world, and we'll get a lot of vaccine here in the United States, and we'll get to an area where we have a lot of vaccine. But there are other countries, other large countries, that will take a long, 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 long time to get vaccine. And because people can travel from Africa to the U.S. or from the U.S. to South America very quickly, what we're worried about is that even though the disease may be low here, it could easily be imported into the country. But I think as disease rates go down, we're going to be able to open more and more things like we did in Douglas County. We were able to open restaurants, bars, and gyms. We were able to open schools. And I would hope that we're going to be able to open sports and other kinds of things along the way. However, I still think large indoor gatherings are worrisome. I still think people are going to need to stay home when they're sick. And I still think in situations like going to the doctor's office, people are going to continue to wear masks.
What about schools? Some sports are going to be going for the spring, according to the Oregon School Activities Association. Some are not. Are there things kind of behind the scenes involved in making sure that as this attempt is underway to have some sports, that everything is done safely?
So the sports teams are trying really, really, really hard to make this safe. I think the NFL did a very nice study that suggests that outdoor activities are much safer than indoor activities, and that if people wear masks and distance and whatever, you can probably stop any spread on the field. The problem, unfortunately, with sports is that athletes tend to get together before and after practice, come over to my house after practice, play video games, go out before or after for a meal. And we think it's those other kinds of things that happen that are going to spread the disease rather than the sports itself.
Interesting. About a minute left here on Inside Douglas County with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. Talk about the local effort dealing with people that are in isolation and quarantine. Right now we've got 813 people, 271 in isolation, 542 in quarantine. How are those folks kept track of?
So we have a group of people called contact tracers, and those are people who follow them to check to be sure they're not developing symptoms and to provide them some assistance should they need it. So some people need food assistance or rent assistance or something else along the way. And our team of 30 or so contact tracers, that's what they do.
And it sounds like a lot of phone calls and maybe at various hours of the day and night.
Right. So we have people 24/7 working on these processes. So, you know, sometimes you're working on emails at midnight and see notes of people who are going out to help people with their needs.
All right. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being on this afternoon.
All right. Thank you so much.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.